You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
Movement for Justice is fighting for a future where all people are treated equally, a world where we can all express our culture and identities. This is a civil rights organisation. These are the passionate and moving stories from some of their members.
My name is Osman Kabogo. I'm from Uganda and I'm 26 years old.
Why did you come to the UK?
I came to the UK to escape homophobic abuse and persecution which I suffered back in Uganda. That was the main reason why I came here to the UK.
And what sort of homophobic abuse?
Well, I was attacked two times while we were in a club. And the first time was when I was in school. They found out that I was gay because I had sex. Okay, they caught us having sex in the dormitory where students used to live. And then they paraded us in front of all students and they had to beat us up. And then they expelled us out of school. And then that was the beginning of my life for me. And then all along I was hiding. I couldn't live anywhere. It was really horrible. So I had to ask some few people about how I can get out of Uganda and go somewhere else. And I actually met it was a friend of mine who told me about the UK. And then that's how I got to come here.
You said you've been here since 2002, so we're talking about 9 years in the country.
Yeah, 9 years in
the country. I guess the big question is, if you wanted to go home, could you?
Well, at the moment, I cannot go back home. First of all, let me pass. I want to mention this. Well, people, if somebody hears about asylum seekers, they don't think that I myself don't want to be an asylum seeker. Because that's the thing, if you're in Britain here, that thing will stay on you forever, that you're an asylum seeker. I'm proud to be a Ugandan. I want to go back to Uganda. But if I can't, if I'm in the UK and I'm applying for asylum is not a good thing for me. Because I understand it's really difficult to get it, first of all. And after you get it, you have to go through some processes which are really hectic. I don't think being an asylum seeker is a really good thing. And people should remember that we all don't come here just because we want. It's because we're fleeing persecution. If I come out and tell you that, well, I'm fleeing Uganda because of this and that, I mean what I'm saying. You won't come out and say that I'm lying to you. Because to be honest with you, everyone would love to go back to their home. There's no place like your country. There's nothing like that. Being an asylum seeker is really no good thing, but we just have to do it because we're fleeing persecution and all that kind of thing that happens to us.
Great. Now, can you tell me how you got involved with the organization?
Well, I got involved with the organization. It was... Nah, I just have to talk about how the Home Office got to get me, then how I ended up in detention, all that kind of thing.
Tell us the story.
Okay, so it was in late 2009 when I was at my house in Woolwich. Early in the morning, I had somebody knocking on the door, and then when I opened the door, then you can be here. Well, they told me I should stand there, I shouldn't move. Then afterwards, they asked me for my name, date of birth, and all that kind of thing. I told them, well, yeah, my name is this. I first told them the wrong name. Then they insisted, tell us your real name. Then after that, I told them my real name. Then they found out that my visa had expired. And then they had to take me to detention. So once I reached the detention, they were telling me to sign papers. I told them, no, I'm not signing no papers. Then I told them that I'm seeking asylum. Then after that, once I said that, they took me to Brooke House in Gatwick. That's when I got to meet someone from Uganda And then this person introduced me to a lawyer, but that lawyer is not really a lawyer. It's just like gives advice. I didn't know by then that he was not a real lawyer. Then he told me that I will do every case for you or that kind of thing, blah, blah. Then he asked for money from me then said, well, since by then I never knew anything about asylum, but I don't know how it came into my mind, and I told the Home Office that I'm seeking asylum, that I don't know. Then I told him that, when I told him that I'm gay, I don't want to go back home, I did this, this happened to me, what was it, back in Uganda. Then he told me, well, at the moment, no one from Uganda is getting any asylum because of his sexuality, so you should say something else. I said, now what can I say? That's not the reason why I came to this country. Then he told me, you make up anything. I said, now what can I say? So after, that's when I gave him my money before him telling me that. So after 2 weeks, then this guy doesn't pick up his phone. I called him several times, but he never picked up his phone. Then that's when I realized that he had taken my money. Then after a month, I was transferred to Hammondsworth, which is in Heathrow, the detention center. Then they was telling me that my case is on fast track. I didn't know nothing about fast track. Then as soon as I arrived, I remember I arrived at around early in the morning, 2 a.m. Then I slept like for 2 hours. Then they called me the following day. They gave me papers I didn't even read. I just chucked them in the bin. I never wanted to know because I was really stressed. After that, the following day, they told me that I'm doing an interview. I said, well, you haven't even informed me of doing an interview. As far as I know, at least you give a notice for anyone that you're going to do an interview. So they just forced me to do the interview. I did nothing whatsoever. I didn't know what to say, first of all. Then the following day, you refuse, all that kind of thing. Then there was this guy in detention who I went and I told him that, you know what, I wasn't going to tell you this, but I'm gay. I don't know if this will work for me. I want to seek asylum. I was with this lawyer. He told me different things. I don't know if this will work for me. He told me he doesn't know. After like 3 weeks, no, 2 weeks, I went to court. I never had a lawyer, so I didn't know what to do in court, to be honest with you. I just sat there. Home Office representative was all over me. I said, no, I just sat down and kept quiet. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to argue, that kind of thing, whatever procedure is done in court. I didn't know. So I say, whatever happens, let it happen. There's nothing I can do. Then the judge said that, nah, I refuse, inconsistent, we don't believe you whatsoever. Said, okay. Then it was, I remember it was 2 days after the court hearing, then these people came, these prison inspectors, they came to the detention inspecting, okay. They told us, if you really want some legal advice, you can come, we can help you, tell you what to do, that kind of thing. Then, fair enough, I met this guy. I tell him that, you know, I told him my problem. He told me, well, you need to, first of all, to make a complaint about this lawyer. And then he took me to the library where these forms were. And they never told us anything like that. If, like, a lawyer does not want or makes a mistake in your case, or he drops you without a reason, you can make a complaint. They told me that the lawyer has accepted that he made a mistake, he didn't represent you the way he had to, and he will pay you back your money. Then that's when I had to prepare a fresh claim based on my sexuality. But by then I had met one lawyer, and then this lawyer looked into my refusal from the judge. He said, nah, they will not accept your fresh claim or that kind of thing. I said, well, if they accept it, will you be able to represent me in court? Then she accepted. Then I called this lawyer. I told her that, listen, my fresh claim has been accepted. Will you help me? She accepted. She came running. Like, yeah, I'm going to do everything. After
what was her name?
She was from refugee and migrant.
That's okay, it's fine.
I can't remember her name, but she was from refugee and migrant. So when after signing the papers, we went for the interview again. I had to do the interview again. So, but during the interview, before you doing the interview, the lawyer has got to sit with you, go through your case, or that kind of thing. But she didn't want to do that with me. Then while we were doing the interview, she was not even listening. She was like playing with her phone, kind of thing. I told her, what's going on? Are you here to help me or what? Then she said, no, you're doing okay. You're doing fine. So we went for a break. I see them talking with each other, the Home Office representative and the lawyer. I said, no, what's going on? I thought that it's not supposed to happen. The following day, I was refused. Then that's when this lawyer said, nah, I cannot take your case no more, that kind of thing. So no, I'm here by myself again. Another lawyer disappointing me. Then I had to appeal against the decision. Then I did all that by myself. But the lawyer had everything on my, all the papers, the documents, which I had to use in court. She had them. And then she said she would send them. But I got them after the hearing. But before that, the court hearing, I told the Home Office that I cannot go to court without having my papers because there's nothing I have. The Home Office representative told me that you write a letter to the judge explaining your situation. Maybe they can adjourn the hearing. And that's what I did. So when I got to court the following day, the judge just told me that I moved you off fast track, that it's all up to them to release you, which they did. They had to release me because whoever is in Hammersworth is going to be fast tracked. My case wasn't on fast track anymore. So I was released, and then I was taken on Bolton. By then, I was kind of getting to understand how the asylum system works. So when I got to Bolton, I knew that I needed a lawyer. Bolton, I've never been to Bolton. There's nobody there, no. Like, it was kind of very new. It's like, well, it's more like me, the first day I arrived in Britain. I knew nobody. It was all about myself. Now, how am I going to start? I went to Citizens Advice Bureau. Then they were telling me, blah, blah, I'm going to make you, give you an appointment. Okay. I said, yeah, I waited for an appointment. They gave me an appointment after 3 weeks. But before that, I received a letter from the court saying that I have to go to court after 1.5 months of me getting there. But the appointment they gave me was after, 2 weeks before court. So when I reached there, they told me, no, we haven't got a lawyer for you. Now I said, no, what can I do? Do I have to do this all over again, that writing the case by myself to the court? I know I'm going to lose. I said, no, let me just write it and then go to court. I won't fail to attend the court, because if you don't attend the court, that's also another thing altogether. I decided to write it again. Then I came back to London for the court hearing. Then I said, now this is the end of me. And then I had to go back to Bolton. I said, now I have to abscond. I have to leave this place, come back to London, find a good lawyer to do my case all over again. And then when I came back to London, I was walking in central London, and then I met a friend of mine called Abbe. And then Abbe, I think that was the time when the London Pride had just finished. And I told Abbe, well, Abbe, I'm in this situation, can you help me out? Then that's when he got to tell me about Movement for Justice. told me that they can help you find a lawyer, they can help you in any way, attend any court pickets, all that kind of thing. And I say, okay. So I've got now to leave Bolton. So that's when I left Bolton, came to London. I remember I never had a place to where to stay, and it's Abby who took me to his friend who lives in Houston, near which my man is forgetful. There's some few things I forget, so I can't remember that. Then I got to meet one of the leaders of Movement for Justice, Alex and Tony, and I had to tell them my case, and they say they will help me, and that's how I got introduced to Antonia afterwards. Then Movement for Justice has been carrying out all these meetings every Sunday. We get to meet and read about Frederick Douglass. They tell us about how his life was. I think you all know about Frederick Douglass. I think Antonio knows better. But at least the little thing about I know about him, he fought for his right, for his freedom. He was a slave. And then we get to go to demonstrations, and also we go to court hearings, one of our members. And for the court hearings we've all attended, they've all been very successful. So that really pushed me ahead to do my case. And fair enough, they got me the lawyer. We had to do, I was patient, and I've been very, very patient, because it's taken me like 6 to 7 months to finish that. And it's just recently when I submitted everything back to the Home Office, and I'm just waiting to see whatever will happen. But I really thank Movement for Justice for helping me out. And I advise all these asylum seekers who are there. There's this group called the Movement for Justice. It can really help you go through your case and without any hassle. I don't want them to go through what I went through, because I understand now the situation Edson Cosmas is in. Hammersworth is a very, very horrible place. I'd rather be in prison than being in Hammersworth. Because I know in prison I know my time limit, but Hammersworth, you never know what you're going to expect. Every minute you're on pressure, this what's going to happen? So it's like, you know, torturing you mentally and physically. Physically, they won't show it, but that will really break you down inside. So,
can you tell us about the actual legal implications being LGBT in Uganda?
The implication, I think you guys all know about what happened to one of the LGBT member who was killed in Uganda, called David Kato. Those are the kind of implications. LGBT members, they are not accepted whatsoever. These politicians are using this as their way of getting votes. Because I understand Museveni did it because he knew people were fed up of him, so he had to bring up something whereby people will be behind him. And I think he came out with this gay bill. Once he put it to public, and then he had to make sure that the press are behind him, so that's what they did. And then the implications were that everyone started hating every LGBT member, and then that's how they came to kill David Kato. So I really don't think that I should be in the same kind of situation once I'm taken back. The laws there are really horrible, and the people themselves just don't like LGBT members. These people, okay, now let me talk about these people who think that some people are fabricating things, this or something. Well, I don't agree with them. Somebody coming out and saying that he's a member of LGBT or he's gay or lesbian, definitely you'll be known. Now, me, I was put all over the internet that I'm one of those people who are going to be deported back to Uganda. Because I knew the consequences. Why would I fabricate something like that? So, going back to the point that these people who accuse others that they fabricate stories, sometimes the Home Office might just fall on you just like that. and you're not ready whatsoever, what are you going to say? They will try to twist you and ask you questions in order for them to get that. Once you make a small mistake, they will use that against you. And then you're done. You might be gay, but just because you failed to answer that one simple question, they say that you're lying to them. What can you do?
You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.